The guy that I've been playing tennis with for the last 10 years, he's a CEO of a startup here in town that builds products for Amazon. And he turns to me, he looks me straight in the eye, and he goes, OpenAI. And I look at him and I go, what? And he goes, OpenAI. He goes, it's brand new and you need to check it out. And he turns around and he walks out the building. So I'm like, what? And so I go back and I check in, and sure enough, it was the first big commercial introduction in this whole artificial intelligence systems that were coming on. It was this whole ChatGPT-3 at the time was the big new product release. And for people who are wordsmiths, like we are in the publishing business, his implication was that here's something new that you really got to check out. So I started checking it out and thought to myself, wow, this is pretty cool.
Welcome to The Author's Leverage, the podcast where we explore the journeys that await you beyond your book. I'm your host, Parshel Tashi, and in each episode, we connect with best-selling authors, publishing experts, and industry pros to unveil the pathways that enable you to leverage and amplify your book for extraordinary impact and income. Whether you're a seasoned author or just embarking on your authorpreneur adventure, prepare to be inspired. Today, we're joined by a guest who's going to share some invaluable insights with us. But before I introduce them, I want to invite you to download your copy of our ebook and its companion digital workbook. It's called 5 Ways to Get More Bang for Your Book. It's a comprehensive guide to supercharge your author journey, and you can find it below this episode, along with where you can connect with us on social media, subscribe, and rate the podcast. Now, let's dive into today's episode and take a sneak peek into the future of your success as an author.
Everybody, it's Parshel. I am really happy and excited. I've actually got a guest with me today. This is his second time on The Author's Leverage. He was one of our first episodes that I highly recommend you go and check out with Mr. Brian Heathman. I'm so excited that he's here. We're actually going to be talking today about storytelling in particular, right? Stories that are infused into your books, into your work, can of course accomplish what's needed around the nature of your book, but also there's so much other, more potential, right? And this are the things that we like to talk about on The Author's Leverage, right? How can we do more with our written work? So let me introduce you to Brian and jump into the conversation. Brian Heathman is the CEO of Made for Success Publishing and the author of number one bestseller, Book Marketing Reinvented, a resource for authors focused on a successful book launch. Brian worked for 3 Fortune 10 companies and combines his marketing know-how with publishing to create bestsellers written by the world's most popular thought leaders. Brian, welcome back to The Author's Leverage.
Thank you, Parshel. It's awesome to be back on the show. It was really fun. I think you had me on your first recording ever.
Yes.
So it's actually really exciting for me to come back on after you've had your legacy of success in doing this type of work. And talking about the power of story today is going to be a really super interesting conversation, just given all the, oh man, I don't know. In this job that I've got as a publisher, right? I get to work with thought leaders and speakers and professional athletes, and everybody has a story to tell. And I've just had the unique opportunity for almost 20 years working to craft these stories in a meaningful way. In fact, our mission here is to craft stories that will make society a better place. And it's really fun that you invited me to come and talk about stories here on the show.
Yeah, I love this direction for our conversation today. And you know, definitely makes me think back again, like you said, our last conversation on the podcast here was, you know, at least a couple of years ago for sure. So even looking back, just to kick off this conversation, what would you say has been a notable change or something that you've seen happen just within the last couple of years of publishing? What are sort of the trends of things that you've seen happen that have been interesting?
As it so happens, I've got a story to tell around that. I'm a amateur tennis player. Okay. Not super good, not super bad, just a middle of the road kind of player. And I live in Seattle. And in the suburb where I live, we're surrounded by Amazon on one side and Microsoft on the other. Just about everybody that meets at this tennis club is in some form of technology. So I'm playing a game last, it was either October or November. And this is 1 year and 2 months ago. And the guy that I've been playing tennis with for the last 10 years, he's a CEO of a startup here in town that builds products for Amazon. And he turns to me, he looks me straight in the eye, and he goes, OpenAI. And I look at him and I go, what? And he goes, OpenAI. He goes, it's brand new and you need to check it out. And he turns around and he walks out the building. So I'm like, what? And so I go back and I check in, and sure enough, it was the first big commercial introduction in this whole artificial intelligence systems that were coming on. It was this whole ChatGPT-3 at the time was the big new product release. And for people who are wordsmiths, like we are in the publishing business, his implication was that here's something new that you really got to check out. So I started checking it out and thought to myself, wow, this is pretty cool. You can prompt it with a few things and it sends you these long form answers, and the answers are actually pretty good. Then I had an author call me up a couple months later and he goes, hey, Brian, he goes, I want to write a book using ChatGPT-3. And I said, okay, do it. I'll read it, check it out, and see if it's any good. Send it through my editing team. And this guy, he's spiritual, and he wrote a book that had a spiritual top spin, and he was asking the machine spiritual questions. Specifically, he was asking about spiritual questions having to do with a book in the Bible called Proverbs. Okay, so the book of Proverbs has 31 different chapters. So he asked the machine, what's the most important verse in chapter 2 in Proverbs? And so the machine would pick a verse and then write 800 words about why it's important. And so I read it and I was like, dang, it's actually pretty good. And so chapter 3 was on Proverbs 3, and chapter 4 was on, so all the way down to Proverbs 31. So at the time, we had an intern. She was a senior in high school. And our director of marketing was looking at this whole ChatGPT thing, and he was pretty intrigued by it, and he was using it as well. And he turns to the intern, now mind you, a senior in high school, okay? And he said, I want you to create the cover art using AI tools for this book that was written by AI. So 3 weeks later, she hands off a cover. And I could probably even show you the cover if I wanted to. Let's see.
Yeah, let's if we can.
All right, here we go. So this is the cover art that was created. And can you see this okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So here's the cover. We trained it on some really popular books that were in this genre.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And off we go. So yeah. So we've been playing around with this whole AI thing pretty extensively. And if you ask me, your original question was, what's happened over the last 2 years? It's been significant in the publishing business. That here, and we found like before I came on the show today, I wrote down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 things that we're using this thing for every single day.
As a publisher.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now we're not using it to write books.
Right.
This guy was, but we're using it for all kinds of clever things. Yeah. So that's been something significant that's happened here lately.
Yeah. And it's so interesting just to witness how it's been embraced, how it's being utilized in different ways. And I think that for some that have been apprehensive to it, weren't really, didn't care for it as an option, I think just now it's like, it's inevitable, right? I think the same way that people weren't necessarily excited about TV when TV became a thing. And I think there's some adjustment that needs to happen. But of course, there's lots of concerns as well that come to that space. So I'd love for you to speak to a little bit of maybe how you've addressed those concerns or maybe how those have shown up in that space for you.
Okay. Great question. Super relevant, as a matter of fact. We're working with this woman who lives in Beverly Hills. And she wrote a children's book. And we submitted some illustrations that our product manager had developed to give her kind of a flavor for the types of images that we were thinking would be good for her book. And we used ChatGPT-3, or I think we used DALL-E, to create the images. And the author loved them. I totally want the illustrations in my children's book to look exactly like that. You guys nailed it. Because she holds the Guinness World Record for the longest jump rope. She goes by the moniker of the Beverly Hills Jump Rope Queen. But she just loved these images. And she also works with a really good intellectual property attorney. Okay, so you asked, what kind of concerns do we have with AI? The attorney and I get on the phone. And we're talking about copyright protection, okay? And sure enough, when you start to look under the hood, the United States Copyright Office will not grant a copyright to images created by a machine. They've deemed, and this is as of maybe 4 months ago, and copyright law changes all the time. Probably by the time you hit publish on this thing, everything will change. So everything I'm saying is probably irrelevant. But at the time when I looked into it, they determined that copyright had to be granted to a human and not to a machine, even though it takes a skilled human to write the prompts that tell the machine what to do. And then you iterate it to make it better and better. But they're not recognizing that as a work that can be protected by copyright. So if you want to produce a children's book and you really love the imagery that you can create using AI, you can publish the book. No problems, no questions asked. But if you fast forward and let's say your images get super popular like Pokemon or Hello Kitty or like Mickey Mouse, that's relevant. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And you want to protect the rights to that image, the Copyright Office won't give you protections. Why is that important? So Mickey Mouse just went into the public domain. This is the original Mickey Mouse. I think it was from a movie from 1924, and I'm making this up. So try not to fact check me too hard. But it was a movie called Steamboat Willie. And they've got a picture. I don't know if you can picture Mickey. And he's at the helm of a boat and he's bouncing around. And it was the original drawing of Mickey Mouse. That image just went into the public domain on January 1st, 2024. Okay. And on January 1st, 2024, was the release of the first slasher movie. So because it went into the public domain, somebody made a horror film where the central character was this original drawing of Mickey Mouse. So that's what happens when you don't have copyright protection or when your copyright protection expires. So this attorney that I was talking to that was hired by the Beverly Hills Jump Rope Queen, she's got a valid point. If you create something that goes super popular and you want to create plush toys and you want to create a cartoon, but you don't own the copyright, then anybody can take your imagery and start making slasher movies or whatever. I know, it's funny. Yeah.
It reminds me of, side note, I think it was a Black Mirror episode, I believe, where it was a Netflix similar streaming platform that actually took your stories that were, let's say, shared on social media and things like that, and would create a storyline and would use the likeness of your image to create a movie. It was really weird. But anyway, it just, like you said, there's so many concerns around that area that definitely pop up as just things to be aware of and to be careful with.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, biggest thing this year, AI for sure.
Yeah.
Concerns, copyright concerns, for sure. But really interesting questions.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad we started out there. I think that was a pretty interesting bridge from our previous conversation to present day. So it's just interesting to hear what all is taking place. So let's shift gears now and really talk about, of course, the core of what we wanted to get in today, which was storytelling. And even in your explanation thus far, I don't know how many stories you told. I'm counting maybe three or four. But it just really, of course, to the point of what we're here to talk about, it really does paint a picture and allows people to go down a journey with you. Very effective in writing, very effective in also in the marketing of books and how we're able to spread those. So we'd love to hear how you specifically define storytelling, and especially speaking to some of the authors that maybe are struggling to in the sales aspects of their books, right? I would love to shine some light on that skill set and that ability to also then translate to the success of their book.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of different types of stories that you can tell. Stories that will evoke an emotion. Stories that will move people into action. The type of stories that I would love to talk about today are the type of stories that can persuade an audience to take some type of behavior. The first book that I wrote was called Conversion Marketing. And it's all about how to convert a website visitor into a paying customer when nobody's in the room. Okay. So it's all about digital marketing and being able to get somebody to visit your website, visit your store, hit buy now, and buy whatever products that you're selling, whether it's a book or a jet ski. And so persuasive storytelling, to me, is an important skill to have, because as you start to look at things like your conversion, again, this book, Conversion Marketing, your conversion rate becomes really important. So let's just go into the couple stories that we've told so far. We talked about the walking off the tennis court and the being surrounded by technologists and somebody talking about AI. And then we got to talk a little bit about how AI is impacting the book publishing business. Oh, how is that persuasive? Everybody that's listening now knows that Brian Heathman at Made for Success is in the book publishing business. Okay, so a clever little segue and little things, like little subtle things you can do to persuade an audience. But where did this whole thing come from? My first job out of college was with a company called Xerox. And Xerox, at the time, had the best sales training program in the world. And then after they train you, it takes 6 months to train somebody, then they send them out into the city to start knocking on doors and convincing people to buy photocopiers and fax machines and typewriters. Okay. So suddenly I've been dated, because you can go back and look up at the invention and you can probably reverse engineer how old Brian is. Okay. So there's Brian, 22 years old, knocking on doors, selling fax machines, copiers, and typewriters. They taught a sales process. And what I've learned over the years is that the sales process that they taught was very effective at persuading people into buying photocopiers. So what I've done is I've modified that program taught by the best sales trainers in the world to tell stories in a persuasive fashion. And that's what I wanted to talk about today, is share with people how they can, a structure of how they can think about stories that they want to tell that will persuade listeners, whether it's one-on-one, whether it's over the phone or whether it's a speech to a crowded room or whether it's a podcast interview talking to tens of millions of people like this podcast today. So what does that structure look like? So I'm glad you asked. The process that I talk about is a four-part process. It's called SPIN. Each letter represents a different aspect of the story. The S in SPIN stands for the situation. So you want to tell your audience what the situation is. For instance, I'm an amateur tennis player and I'm walking off the tennis court and I'm surrounded by all these people that work in technology and my friend turns me and looks me in the eye. Okay, so there's the situation. Now, not only did I set the situation, but I gave some descriptors. And the descriptors in storytelling are really important because what you're trying to do really is you're trying to get people to visualize elements of your story. Okay, so that's a really important thing. Second thing that you want to do is you want to set up a problem. That's what the P stands for in SPIN, is set up a problem statement that somehow relates to what you're trying to persuade people to do. And then, so you're basically directing their thinking. The third thing is then you want to talk a little bit about the implications of the problem. So you don't just say, here's your problem. You want to unpack it. You want to maybe talk about two or three implications of that problem. So you want people to dwell on the problem that you've set up. And then the last piece is the N in SPIN, where you talk about their needs. Okay. So you get them thinking about the problem and you think you go a little bit deeper and you have people thinking about the implications of the problem. And then you start talking about their needs. In terms of being able to tell good stories, especially the persuasive type of stories, if there's anybody out there that is thinking about conversion, like the conversion of people visiting your website, or if I'm out prospecting, or if I'm in a network meeting, how many conversations will it take me until I can convert one of these conversations into whatever my goal might be? It's an important part. Would you like me to like demonstrate?
Yeah, I would love to. I'm actually, as you've been talking, I'm like, how would I tell this story in this type of format? So I would love to hear an example.
Okay. So a number of years ago, I was invited to the office of a celebrity business person in downtown Seattle, you know, the Metroplex where I live. And this guy, his name was Phil Smart Sr. and he owned Phil Smart Mercedes. He was the Mercedes-Benz retailer here in Seattle. And at the time I went to visit him, he was 92 years old. Okay. So I sit down in his office and it's at the car dealership. And there he is, 92 years old, dressed in a full suit and tie. He's probably retired a number of years ago, but he's still coming into the office. And when he does come into the office, he's dressing in a full suit and tie. So I noticed that. And then I'm looking around his office. And this is also part of my training. When you walk into somebody's office, you want to look at the type of objects that they've made a decision to display around their office. Because that tells you a lot about that person. So the stuff that I'm looking at, as I'm looking at the pictures on the wall, as I'm noting the things sitting on his bookshelves, as I'm looking at the titles of the book on his bookshelf, like what's behind me here, the little icons such as this thing right here behind me, it's all World War II memorabilia. I start to ask him some questions and he says, oh yeah. He goes, I was a supply line officer in Northern Africa. And it was my job to move a convoy of tanks and water trucks and gasoline trucks and trucks filled with ammunition and trucks filled with troops across the desert to the front lines. And he goes, at the time, my arch enemy was the German Air Force, the Luftwaffe, I think. Mm-hmm. And they would fly over these slow moving trucks with machine guns, with tracer bullets that turn red hot, and they would strafe the supply line trucks that are filled with, let's see, with gas and ammunition and tanks until the trucks would blow up. So his arch enemy was the general that was over this theater of war. So the war gets over, and it's now 1954 in Seattle. And oddly enough, this guy, Phil Smart Sr., buys the first franchise for Mercedes-Benz in North America, 1954. And guess who the salesman was who was selling the franchise of Mercedes-Benz, a German company, but it was the very general who was responsible for the Air Force in Northern Africa. And over the long arc, they become the best of friends. They go from arch enemy to the best of friends, where when that gentleman died, Phil Smart Sr. delivered the eulogy at his memorial service.
Hmm.
So Phil calls me in because he'd written a book. I'm a book publisher. And he said, hey, I wrote this book and I printed it. And I was wondering, and he goes, and I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars producing this book. And I was wondering if you could help me sell them. So he hands me a copy of the book. And as I'm thumbing through the book, he goes, let me tell you about the reason why I wrote the book. And this 92-year-old man reaches into his wallet and he pulls out a business card and he hands it to me. It's not a business card, but it's a card that he had printed up with his story called The Third Eight. And he explains to me, he goes, listen, everybody, when they wake up, they have three eights. You've got 8 hours of work. You've got 8 hours after work and you got 8 hours of sleep. And that encompasses most people's days.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, and you got to get your sleep and you got to work, but what are you doing with your third eight? And he goes, for decades now, I've been volunteering on Wednesday nights with one of my third eights at the Children's Hospital. And I go down to the cancer ward where there's critically ill children and give them encouragement. And he goes, just this morning, before you got here, Brian, he said, a woman came in with her husband, her children, and her grandchildren. And she said, Phil, I know that you're 92 years old, and I just wanted to have a chance to come in here and say thank you. Because when I was 9 years old, I was one of those kids at Children's Hospital. And your encouragement saw me through the most difficult experience that I've ever been through. She goes, I don't know if I would have had the hope to see it through had you not come in and encouraged me during that time. I get choked up every time I tell the story. And she said, I wanted to make sure that I could say thank you personally and show you my legacy of my family before you passed away and thank you. And he said, a week doesn't go by where he doesn't have one of those meetings from his decision to spend the third eight. And he goes, my book that you've got sitting on your lap tells people the philosophy of the third eight. And it's called Angels Among Us. And he goes, you don't have to volunteer at the Children's Hospital. You can plant trees. You can volunteer at PAWS. You can go down and join the PTA, whatever it is that floats your boat, but do something that gives back. The very next day after leaving his office, I got an email from, so I play the slide trombone. I've played it ever since I was 8 years old, and I've gotten pretty good over the years. And so I'm on an email list of Seattle area trombone players. and they're saying, hey, we're looking for a trombone quartet who can play a When the Saints Go Marching In at a memorial service coming up. So I'm just fresh on this whole third eight conversation with Phil Smart. So I raise my hand and I say, I'll do it. So I go to a couple rehearsals. We find the music, we rehearse it, and then we go down to this church on a Saturday and we file in, we set up our music stands, we play When the Saints Go Marching In, we grab our music stands and our stuff and we file out. That was a deal. So I just happened to be the last trombonist walking out. And sure enough, this 50-year-old woman, she comes racing out and she grabs me by the elbow and she goes, oh my gosh, she goes, I want to thank you people so much. That was my father's favorite song, and I know that he was watching from heaven. Okay. So now all of a sudden, the third eight comes into practice where it wasn't about blessing this family with that music, but her running up and expressing her gratitude for a simple act of service, something that was like, for me, it was a wave of my left hand, right, to go in and do this. But it had so much meaning and impact. And I walked away a changed person. I'm still talking about it today, and I get choked up when I think about this. The difficult thing about this story was that when Phil Smart Sr. asked me into his office, and he said, hey, can you sell this book? I took a look at it, and unfortunately, he made it without the benefit of having a publisher provide oversight, because he wrote a book and printed a book that was unsaleable. The book was too big to fit on a bookshelf. It was filled with glossy photographs of all these important things that he'd done in his life. But because it was so overbuilt, it was too expensive. So it would never have been priced at a way that a retailer could make money, because people didn't have the appetite at that time for paying this type of top dollar for a book at retail. So as a publisher, I said, book's too big to fit on a shelf, so there's nowhere I can sell it. And it's way too expensive. People aren't going to pay this. Unfortunately, I can't help you. And I turn around and left. And less than a year later, Phil Smart Sr. passed away. And I am pretty darn sure that Phil Smart Jr., if there is a Phil Smart Jr., probably took his couple $100,000 investment in those books and threw him in the dumpster behind the auto dealership, because the books were virtually worthless sitting there, just taking up space in stacks of boxes. In terms of telling a story and really being able to turn it to meet the needs of others, the true power of being able to do this is, if you've ever thought about writing a book and you wanted to come to Made for Success to get help to write that book, working with somebody that knows what they're doing in the book publishing business, and it's a big $27 billion industry, it really does pay some dividends. And if you've got a legacy like Phil Smart with his third eight, it's important that those stories get told right. It's important that those stories don't pass with you when you're ready to pass. And it's certainly important that those stories don't get thrown into a dumpster. Okay. So I happen to believe I'm in the business of stories, storytelling. And I place a very high value on words. I think words structured right can actually change our future state. I think we can dictate our future through the power of words. It's a weird philosophy. I feel very strongly in the spoken word. I feel very strongly that words done right can save relationships, can repair families, can create legacies, and do a whole myriad of things. You've been listening to me to tell all these stories, but these stories are being told because I feel very deeply in my soul the importance of them and how we can make our society a better place through the powers of stories.
Wow. Like I, as you were going through and giving us this story, Brian, oh my God. First off, what compelling stories all in what you just shared. But then also, again, to your point, I can see the nature of the framework that you shared with us on SPIN, how you set up the situation, presented the problem, showed the implications of that problem, and then what the needs really look like when giving that setup. That was beautifully done.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's a story that really sinks deep with me. I can't even tell the story without tearing up, right?
Yeah.
It truly is a skill that I think all of us need. I think stories, if you're going in to talk to your boss about getting a promotion, I think a story is the best way to make that request. A persuasive story. And that's why I believe so strongly in persuasive stories. Mm-hmm. The utility of a story becomes very important. Myself, I have a kind of another system that I use when it comes to telling stories. I actually have a resource that I created called My Pocket Stories. Okay. Where I have about a dozen stories that I've told on several occasions, where I've actually got good at telling the story that I figuratively keep in my hip pocket. I really keep it somewhere trapped away here, but I call them pocket stories. So I can pull those stories out of my pocket and use them when I'm having important conversations and conversations like this. And so I think all of us need to have an inventory of pocket stories. If it's no more than three pocket stories, that's fine. And it doesn't have to be an extraordinary story. It doesn't even have to be your story. I've been telling you about Phil Smart's story. I haven't said anything about myself, right? I haven't told you a Brian Heathman story. This is all, you know, third person stuff. You can craft stories based on other people's extraordinary experiences. You can craft stories off your everyday experiences. I've heard people do that very effectively. It doesn't take these big extraordinary moments, but as long as your story follows the framework where you're setting up a situation where people can feel the environment, where you introduce a problem, you unpack that problem with the implications just to get people thinking about it, right? And really mulling it through. And then talking about the people's needs or their desires, right? I think it's more, if the whole SPIN acronym worked as SPID with S-P-I-D, I would do that. But SPIN just works better because I think people can remember the model of SPIN.
Exactly. Yeah. So powerful. And I love the concept and the idea of having stories you can pull out of your pocket, right? Because you're right. It's interesting to know that you have them to utilize in a number of different conversations and always just have them on deck for any conversation, really. That's so powerful. Brian, I'm so thankful. I feel like you gave us so much meat here to pick from and with the framework. Like, I encourage everyone to like really think about your stories that you're telling and consider this format, right? From somebody who's been in the publishing space for a long time, has seen a lot of different written work come out and really affect change in the world. This is such a great concept, I think, that can apply to all natures of how we're communicating. And for us as authors, how we're sharing our own stories, how we're helping to do that. Because I guarantee you, knowing how to do this and even perfect it as a skill is going to help you to grow and share more about your book. And because, of course, you've published a book, but once it's done, you're not done. It's up to us to continue to tell those stories. So, Brian, I'm so grateful you reminded us of that today in this conversation. And I would love for you to share, as we're wrapping up, any last parting words of advice, and then where folks can get in touch with you and learn more about what you have coming up this year.
Yeah. I think my last piece of advice really does get down to these pocket stories. Try to get three stories in your hip pocket that will serve you well as you're at networking events, as you're sitting down and talking to your manager or your boss, or if you're leading your team, these stories will come in very effectively. For anybody that wants to learn a little bit more about professional storytelling, I would encourage you to visit madeforsuccess.com. That's the publishing business that I run. And there's a tab on the website called the Draft a Book Experience. And if you ever thought about working with a professional to create a writing plan for your book, it's a great place to start because that will get you set up in the right direction. I've done this with dozens of people all around the world to be able to take their ideas and turn them into intellectual property. So it's an incredibly exciting, fun experience, and I would definitely encourage you to check it out.
Absolutely. Brian, thank you for sharing that. I definitely recommend those who are interested in even hearing this conversation today. If something is sparked, I definitely recommend that you go and connect with Brian. Go to the links where we'll make sure those are provided below the episode or wherever you're checking this out. And Brian, one last question I will ask you that I usually ask all of our guests. Again, thank you so much for being on here. I want to acknowledge again just your work that you've done in this space for authors and supporting them. Thank you. I just want to acknowledge your the way that you do it. It's always very concise, to the point, and very effective. And I love the way that you share and you move. We'd love for you to share as we wrap up. What's your one word for this year?
All right. My word for the year is going to be very memorable, because my word for the year is word.
Ah.
We talked about how the power of words can change the future. And I would love people to be thinking about that.
Yeah.
And thinking about how your words can make the world a better place.
That's beautiful. That's so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Brian, for being here, sharing your wisdom with us today on the Author's Leverage. We're going to gear up for episode number 3 at some point. So you guys look out for 2025's conversation with Brian. But thank you so much again for being here and tuning in with us today.
All right. Awesome. It's been a pleasure. And thanks for having me on the show.
All right. That concludes another episode of the Author's Leverage. And I trust you're leaving today's conversation inspired and equipped to see your book as a source for so many possibilities. Before we part ways, I want to remind you to download your copy of the ebook and its digital companion workbook, 5 Ways to Get More Bang for Your Book. Again, it's a roadmap that's going to be useful to help you unlock the full potential of your book. Find it on our website, connect with us on social media, subscribe to the podcast, and share it along with a fellow author. Until next time, remember that your words have the power to change lives. So keep innovating, keep leveraging, and keep making an extraordinary impact. We'll see you next time.